This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. If you need any more information, head to FUBARradio.com.
FUBAR Radio and UN Women UK present a live 24-hour radio show.
24 hours.
Just like in the movies, it starts to rain and we, we're the broken beauties, blindfolded minds collide and we fall. When the curtain drops, our touch is just a touch. Now like in the movies, our story.
On the phone line right now, we've got singer-songwriter Lucy Spraggan.
Do you know who I love musically and lyrically? I've just heard vibes from Adele Ray at the moment. Well, oh. I've loved her for years.
Wow.
And I just love how she is so... She's like an openly, just weirdly sexual... She just says what she wants to say. She's one of those women in the music industry that you know she just does what she wants. And that, for me, is a huge... inspiration, because you don't see that many women doing that.
Lucy Spraggan, FUBAR Radio.
Yeah, welcome back. This is FUBAR Radio. I'm Rachel Downey, and I've got some new guests in the studio. I'm very, very excited. We've got Callum Swiggan and Rowley.
Hello.
Welcome.
Hi.
So lovely to see you both. It really, really is. So smiley. It's so good. You're so fresh-faced.
Fresh-faced.
Is it all a bit of a lie?
It is. It's all cover-up.
Thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having us. Yes. It's 4 a.m. slot. It's a fun time to be here.
That you requested.
I thought I was going to go out, have a few drinks with some friends.
Be a bit rock and roll.
Yeah, and then like rock up here, a little bit half cut, yeah, having a great time.
Yeah.
It's not how things plan out.
No. And is it weird being that side of the desk? Obviously, you have your own show here.
I do. It is really weird. When I first came in, I almost went to go and sit in your seat, and I was like, no, you're not in charge today, Callum.
No, but you're more than welcome to, but you can stay till 5 p.m. You're like, no,
Rach. Yeah, no, I'm all right, honestly. You do that.
Yeah, I'm all good. And Rowley, it's lovely to have you here as well.
Hi, yes, nice to be back. It's been a while since I've been here, so...
See, it's great. I'm in safe hands at 4 a.m. in the morning. Yeah. Love how we're all here at 4 a.m, right?
Yeah.
It's a story to tell people. I could never have thought on the radio at 4 a.m, but you know.
Yeah, it's a great story. We're going to go straight, actually, to the phone lines. On the phone right now, we've got fashion designer, Australian-based fashion designer, Weave. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm so very well.
I'm thinking of you as I watch the sun come out over the water in the forest where I'm sitting.
Wish I could say the same. Okay?
I know. Bless you for doing this. It's an amazing thing. And congratulations on everything.
Thank you. That's very, very... I like how people are congratulating me. It's like, let's see if I can get there, yeah. Through the finishing line. Thank you for joining us. You are you're a fashion designer, a label owner, an entrepreneur. You're based in Australia. You work in film and exhibits at International Fashion Weeks and more. Let's start at the beginning for you. Have you always wanted to be a fashion designer? How did you get into fashion?
Yes, it's funny, actually. I grew up on a beautiful... horse breeding stud in the country, and always affiliated with like racing and seeing, you know, mum and dad off to beautiful parties wearing, you know, gorgeous outfits. Mm. And we had this gorgeous little old lady that sat in this weaving place down in the country town, and I was just so fascinated with her life. And she used to travel around the world in her combi and go to different countries and buy one and then come back with her beautiful weavings, and I'd be so fascinated by what she was making. So I don't know, I just became really aware of the rest of the world, and through this weaving and ability to use nature to create clothing and art. So it just sort of stuck with me, and I decided that that's what I was going to do, and I never wavered.
Yeah, it's amazing as well. I think I've got Callum Swiggan and Rowley in the studio as well. To not waver, it's so difficult, isn't it, being in the creative industry, to not think, oh, is it worth the risk? Is it to stay very focused? Has it been easy to stay that focused?
It was just never an issue. I just wasn't interested in doing anything else. And being such a strong woman, I just didn't think that I needed to do anything else. Like, I just knew one foot in front of the other and it would happen for me. And I just didn't mind suffering for my art. And, you know, then, of course, I made it even harder for myself by having a child very young and decided, you know, it didn't work out with my partner. So I did that as well as being a single mother. Mm. So, you know, bit of a double whammy, but, you know, it's just so worth it because slowly but surely it all comes to fruition. And you can look back on all those hard times and just realize how much strength you have and be so enabled to say that. And not be embarrassed about anything. It's just like, no, I'm a strong, empowered woman, and this is what I've done. And to be proud of that is a really great place to get to, you know?
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah. Well, as a single mum in the industry, what prejudices did you come across?
Oh, gosh. I mean, you know, it's often about what you look like. I mean, where do you begin in this industry? My gosh. Going to meetings and, you know, even though I've been independent the whole time, I did obviously have to go and get jobs, and whether it be making uniforms for particular companies or sometimes alcohol companies or, you know, different things. And you go and sit in a boardroom with men and, you know, if you didn't feel beautiful and strong and empowered and dress your best, sometimes you're just not taken seriously. And the stronger you look and the more powerful you look, then obviously they'll take you seriously in what you have to say. And often I felt like I had to put my lipstick on to do that, and I had to put my heels on to do that. And yeah, it's just really interesting that still in this day and age, like, you still need to do that sort of thing. Mm. When you're in an environment like that, which can be marketing or, you know, just those sort of fashion-y kind of industries that feel that what you look like is still makes you stronger. I don't understand it, but it still happens.
Yeah, It is true. You need to sometimes go through those battles, I suppose, to appreciate what you've got right now, but just to make you tougher and more hard,
right?
Hard-nosed, I guess, in this industry.
Because
especially
now I don't give a fuck what I look like when I walk in.
Yes.
You're going to take me for who I am and what I've got to say and my abilities, and, you know, that's just such a wonderful place to get. But when you're younger, I don't know, you kind of admit a little bit. Yeah, it is. It's the wisdom of growing up to get you to that point, isn't it? But, you know, marketing, I think all of that sort of thing within this sort of industry is the biggest battle anyway. And I just had a very interesting experience the other day. I create a lot of my own imagery. I love creating beautiful images for my labels and using strong, gorgeous women. And I don't mind if they look sexy in it. I don't mind if the buttons are low. Like, if she's a strong, empowered woman, I don't think you should shy away from, you know, feeling sexy and looking sexy within that. I don't think that's degrading, but I went and picked up my car from the service place the other day, and I sat down and I paid the bill, and I got up and I opened the door, and right on the door was this huge image of this woman. It was very pornographic, with her, you know, completely naked, legs spread, and I'm just standing there in this workshop with this older man, just looking at him and going, really? Yeah. Like, really? Is that still here?
Yeah.
You know, it's such a fine line, isn't it, to create beautiful imagery of women and feel sexy, but then, you know, portraying them in such a, you know, a degrading way.
Exploitive way, yeah.
Exactly. So that's the balance that we're trying to get to at the moment, is finding your strength in being a woman and your sexuality without it being degrading. So, yeah, that's sort of where I stand on that.
And I suppose at this time, you know, the last, I don't know what, 6 months with the Time's Up campaign, do you feel a change? Do you feel there is more conversation about what women are going through and equality? Do you feel a change?
Oh, there's no doubt. I've got a 21-year-old daughter, and watching them talk about, you know, their empowerment, and, you know, that's real now. We're watching these girls that have been raised by these strong women, and, you know, it's a beautiful thing to watch, you know, 20 of them sitting around and that just being absolutely poignant in their life. And, you know, I don't know if I grew up doing that in the same respect. So, yes, I absolutely believe that the conversations are open, women are stronger, and we're a lot more open and a lot more vocal about it. I mean, look at this, what you guys are doing. This is an international forum, and you've brought people in from all over, you know, it's all over from the world, and also different demographics and whatever it might be. It's really crossing borders. Yeah. So I'm 100% agree on that.
You were just saying a moment ago about kind of like making women feel empowered and showing them as being sexy and strong. And do you think because you are a female yourself, and because you do own your own label and you are kind of in that position, that you're able to kind of give women that platform and almost like take it back from men? Because I feel like a lot of the time men kind of see women as objects, which is a terrible thing. And when they're putting women out there and they're over sexualizing them, and I think it's quite a statement for you to kind of take that back and say, no, we are going to make women sexy and we are going to put women out there, but we're going to do that in a way that's women first, and it puts the woman at the heart of it.
Right. Look, I was a huge fan of a woman called Josephine Baker, and back in the 50s when she was the first one on stage wearing banana skin and, you know, shaking her booty on stage for gentlemen to watch. She was, you know, do you know who she is? I'm sure you do.
I don't. No. I've not heard of her.
Oh, look her up. She's amazing.
Sorry.
Look her up. No, please, afterwards, because she was one of the first women that did this, and as a sexy dancer and, you know, empowered woman standing up there. And, you know, obviously over time men kind of just realised that all they wanted from her was
sex, and it just destroyed her because that wasn't who she was. She was purely believed in what she was doing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I sort of feel like that with music and fashion and all of these things that kind of intertwine, where men have been quite dominant and seen women as those objects, like you're saying. Look, that's an interesting thing to say. Do I feel I'm taking that back? It was just never really an issue to have to take it back, because I feel like there have been women throughout the ages that have been very strong in that sense. Mm. It's beautiful to see now that it's become more mainstream that we're able to do this. It's not different anymore. So that's what's beautiful about it. We're actually all gathered together and we're doing it and united together doing it. So I hope men still do it. Like, you know, there's a fine line again. A photographer in America called Terry Richardson, who was, you know, claiming to be this fashion photographer and whatever, but it was porn, you know. Mm. And watching, you know, that fine line again, it's like you're trying to objectify these women, doing it for your own benefit. But then am I doing a similar thing? So I question myself all the time, and what is it that we're trying to say here? Is the sexuality within your dignity is... That's the point that I'm trying to make.
Mate, that's a brilliant point.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
It makes it so worthwhile. If there are young females listening and maybe daunted about coming into the industry, what advice would you give them?
Just don't even falter. Just keep going and be willing to suffer. You know, if you're coming into the fashion industry, there's no... glitz and glamour, it's, you know, factories and trucks and boxes.
Is that what you mean?
And hard work. And
so is that what you mean by be willing to suffer? Like, do you mean like by
absolutely
to graft and
get
hustle
dirty
and...
right, yeah. Mm. Get dirty and get amongst it and yeah, just not be afraid, because there are so many bullies, and I'm talking women as well, not just men. There's a lot of, you know, bully women in these industries. So yeah, just keep going forward and maintain your dignity throughout all of it. Yeah. That's probably the most important point. Yeah.
I think so. Remain your dignity. Thank you, Weave, so much for talking to us. I was going to say this morning...
Oh, you're so welcome.
What time is it where you are?
It is now... a beautiful 3:30 in the afternoon.
Oh, God.
We are so happy for you. Couldn't be happier.
Yeah, the time of the day, all the water starts to glisten like glitter, and it's such a special time to, you know, be talking to you as well. So, sorry.
That's all right. I'm glad that it's all glittery and sunny and daytime. Weave, thank you so much for talking to us. Have a wonderful day. Thank you, Weave.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Bye.
Take care, Weave. Bye. I get bitter. I don't know about you guys.
We're no, people. I just mad. Trust me.
We're all bitter. Bitter. If you guys want to donate, and that's obviously one of the main reasons we're here, to raise awareness and to get some money, all for the He for She campaign, text UNWN15, followed by the amount you want to donate to 770. Remember, if I have said too much, I probably have a look at the website, londonartsweek.org. All money donated is going towards changing the reality for women and girls globally. I feel it's time for a little song I'm going to play. You Are Simply the Best by Tina Turner. Enjoy.
I call you, I need you, my heart's on fire. You come to me.
Indeed, we are simply the best. Although the conversation we have just been having about age, basically, has made us doubt that. Welcome to the show. We are here at FUBAR Radio. This is our 24-hour live marathon. I'm here till 5 p.m. We've got Callum Swiggan and Rolly here till what?
For a bit. 6 a.m. Yeah.
Do you know what I did last night? I don't know what night I'm even on right now. But when I last slept, I had a couple of glasses of wine, and then I ended up booking randomly a holiday to Tenerife for next week.
Ooh.
Sure, I mean, why not?
Why not?
You're going to need it after this. I mean, come on.
Cancelled it though. I woke up at like 5 a.m. clutching my pearls, like, I've just booked a holiday to Tenerife. You know, it was one of those moments.
Oh, was that one of your drunk spending things?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and it was real clutching the pearls as well. So there we go. I'm here to share. That's what it is. Also here to share. Let's introduce you guys to our listeners if they are unaware of your work. Callum Swiggan, you've got a show here, is that correct? Tell me a little bit about
yourself.
Yeah,
I do. So I started out with doing YouTube, so I have an LGBT plus lifestyle channel. I talk about sex education, mental health, all things like that. And then I started doing a show here at FUBAR where I talk about all things sex and
Amazing.
Sexuality. And it's the perfect place to do it as well, because it's uncensored here and you can say whatever you like. So the BBC would not let me say any of the things that I get to say here. So,
and how's the response been? Like, are you surprised by how popular it is that?
Yeah, and I just love, like, every single week we have so many people writing in and they send in their sex confessions and things like that. And, yeah, people are just so supportive. And so I think there's a real space for talking openly and frankly about sex and sexuality. Yeah. And I think it's not being done enough. I think there's a lot of shame and stigma around that, which causes problems. It causes teenagers to kind of grow up thinking that there's something wrong with sex and not taking care of their sexual health, not using protection.
Yeah.
So I think it's an important thing to talk openly about sex. And I'm glad that people respond well to it.
Yeah, I think we're still quite prudish about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
In an odd way. I think we are. And we find it very uncomfortable to talk about it.
Yeah.
So where do you turn to? I guess, like, for you growing up, where could you turn to get that kind of advice when you wouldn't want to go to your family, for instance?
I mean, I feel like there wasn't really anywhere I could turn to. You know, I would literally turn to porn and things like that, where you get the completely wrong end of the stick so much of the time.
That's all the place I got my sex education from was porn.
Porn.
Which is awful. I haven't recommended
it. But where else do you go? Because I suppose if you can't talk to anyone or you don't have those programs on the radio, on TV, and it's all very soft. I think I remember, for me anyway, growing up, was it The Love Doctor? Literally,
I have no idea what that is.
I'm old. And I'm from the Shire. You know, we had limited stuff, I tell you.
Back when TVs were black and white.
True. We invented the window. There was light. But that, again, wasn't... It was just all about dating. It was all softly. Yeah. There was nothing... And I don't think I even remember really having a sex ed class or a lesson.
We had classes, but it was never...
They were terrible at my classes. I just remember, like, we watched a lady give birth for, like, an hour, like, a full video of a lady giving birth.
And then we both realised we were gay at the moment.
And you're like, high five. Boom. That's all right, then. Never have to go through that. But, again, why... It's crazy. Do you see it changing? Do you see us maybe? Is it a British thing? Do you think we're going to relax a little bit and have more programmes like yours?
I do think things are progressing in terms of education and things like that. Mm. So I think in schools now, teenagers are getting slightly better education. They're getting LGBT plus inclusive education as well, which is amazing.
And I think
that kind of means we're having a new generation of kids growing up and they are more open about sex. Mm. And I think with just like social media and things like that, people are talking a lot more about sex. So I hope there is more of a space for it. And I think going forward, more people will be talking about it. There will be more programs and things about it. So I think with time, maybe we won't be so prudish.
Yes. Again, it takes time, doesn't
it? Takes time.
No one likes change.
No one likes change.
So it's just like slowly but surely. Rolly, first of all, how do you guys know each other?
Oh, God. Oh, God.
This is what 4:28 in the morning does to us. I'm ready. Do I need popcorn for this story?
Yeah, well, you might need popcorn, you know, if I want to really tell the real story.
Yes, you do.
So, I mean, it's a long story. We'll cut it short.
We've got time. Don't worry. So we do.
We basically met through YouTube and we didn't really hit it off to start with.
Oh, really?
No, he was very rude to me.
I was
very rude.
What happened?
He was in my room screaming and shouting at VidCon, which is like a YouTube gathering.
Okay.
In America. I was really tired. I wanted to go to bed. They were all in the room screaming and shouting. And I was like, I just want to go to sleep. Like, why are you here?
I was the person he was staying with at VidCon in the hotel room. Yeah. I had just like made friends with and I was just like having time of my life. Few bevvies.
Enjoying life.
We were playing a really loud drinking game and Rolly just wanted to go to bed.
Bit cranky,
and they wouldn't leave. They wouldn't leave. And then
and he's still here.
I know, exactly.
Still here.
Yeah. Not going anywhere.
And then we were at another YouTube convention here in London, somewhere in the city. And then we saw him, me and my friend at the time, we saw him again.
But you're like...
And we were... And we said hello to him and he just ignored us.
I was going through a breakup. I was literally sat with the guy I was dating at the time.
Yeah.
And we were having like a big fight about to end it kind of thing.
Oh, wow.
And then... along comes Rolly. Hi, how are you doing? And I'm like, get the fuck away from me. I was just like in a bad
no
mood.
One talk to me right now.
And then about 6 months later, I want to say, he messaged me and just said, hi, how you doing? I'm making a video and love to be part of it. And at first I thought he was trying to like trick me. I was like, what's he doing?
What is this person?
I was like, okay, let's just give him the benefit of the doubt, whatever. We met up and then instantly it was like best friends overnight. It was instant.
Yeah.
And I think now we live together.
We live together.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
Yeah.
That's so good. And again, I'm kind of thinking Roldy's the better person from that story. That's all I'm going to say.
Thank you. I am.
It's true.
Yes, he is. And Roldy, tell me a little bit more about what you do.
So I do a YouTube channel as well. I mainly talk about piercings and body modification and like safely ways of doing it and like give information regarding, you know, best styles and all this crazy stuff. I also do LGBT things as well, but mainly modification.
And how did you get into doing modification? Again, is it a form of being creative for you?
When I grew up, all my family, modification was quite a big thing. Like my sister had loads of piercings when she was younger. My parents had like tattoos and everything. So it was always something that was kind of prevalent in my life.
Yeah.
I didn't manage to do it until I got a bit older because I ended up living with my grandparents and they were like, no, you cannot do it.
Yes.
So I was like, for goodness sake. So when I was 18, I started like experimenting. I had like one or two things and then I just became addicted and now I'm like covered and
really
and then I thought let's just do it on YouTube as well. So
that is brilliant. And it's crazy, isn't it, how YouTube, it's a great way obviously of getting your stories out there, but how it's for me, I've been a presenter for years, it's like creating your own work, isn't it? You're kind of finding your genre, your thing. Have you both found that with your channels?
Yeah, definitely. Like, I think you can't, in this day and age, you can't sit around and wait for somebody to come to you and say, yeah, have a TV show, have a radio show, do your thing.
It'd be wonderful if that's the case. It just doesn't happen.
It doesn't happen. So I think kind of like seizing the reins and just doing it yourself is a great thing. And I think there's kind of a stigma around being a YouTuber. Mm-hmm. I think people think YouTuber and they think of your Zoellas and things like that, and they think it's for a very young audience. They think it's for kids.
That's
but actually
true. Yeah.
there's tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of YouTubers all around the world making content around every subject area you can imagine. And there's
literally YouTube channels like dedicated to weird toilets around the world.
Anything.
Did you know that?
I watch a lot of YouTube and stumble across some weird things sometimes.
Not my fault. I can't help my sponsors. But that's amazing.
But for me, I found like, because in society I'm told I can't be professional because I'm modified, like, you know, you're looked down upon as like being either like a drug addict or something, or like a scrounger. But like for me, I was like, fine, I'll do this and I'll make sure that I can show you that I can be successful and be modified, and I'm not just, you know, gonna sleep all day and not have a job and stuff.
And again, it is, like I say, it's creating your own work, I think, to get longevity in this industry and to in a way be your own boss, because you are creating those jobs. It's how you kind of make the industry, you break into the industry, because it's such a odd old career path we've all chosen. It really, really is. So both of you, I'll start with you, Callum. What advice would you give to someone that's thinking that, say, they want to be a presenter and maybe start up a YouTube channel? Is it that easy just to get either a camera or your phone?
I think one thing I always get people ask me is, oh, what equipment do I need? What should I go out
and
buy?
Sound boom,
do I need to buy all this stuff? And no, honestly, like, everyone has a smartphone these days, and that's all you need to get started. And I think just putting yourself out there and starting creating things is how you start doing it. And you know, in the future, if you're able to kind of build up some equipment and things like that, then that's going to improve the quality. But really just start creating and be yourself as well. I feel like even I did it to begin with on YouTube. I was looking at all of these other people on YouTube and I was like, okay, I need to do this and this.
They seem to be doing well.
So I'm going to copy them. And that's the worst thing you can do, you know, just be yourself and hopefully you're a nice person and people like you.
Awkward, Rolly. Rolly, what advice would you give people that...
I think just be realistic at that fact that it is a lot harder now because YouTube is so huge or anything
that's
like that
true.
That it is to get out there. I think if you're going to do it as a business, eventually you do need to buy good equipment and everything. I'm not trying to go against
what
you've just
said. Don't argue with
me. I think we have to remember is that like even a lot of small people now do have DSLR cameras and everything, and a company's going to work with someone who has like a higher quality rather than smaller quality anyway. So I think if you're doing it for fun, that's perfectly fine and that's great and you do you, but I think if you're going to make it a business, you have to kind of be realistic and actually eventually you are going to have to upscale your stuff for brands and things and companies to want to work with you.
Yeah, it's so true. It's it's what you're putting out there basically, and it's how polished it can be. Let's talk about inspirational women. Callum, again, I'll start with you.
Are you going to ask me who my inspirational woman is?
Woman or women, yes.
Shonda Rhimes is always my
brilliant
go-to.
Answer.
Yep. Incredible. lady, and I just like, so she for anyone listening who doesn't know, she creates shows like Scandal, How to Get Away with Murder, Grey's Anatomy, and she's kind of she's forged her own empire, and she creates all of these incredible shows, and they're all unbelievably inclusive. I feel like anybody watching one of her shows can relate to it. She includes she shouts about women, and she raises up women for a start, but she also includes LGBT plus people. She includes people with disabilities. She, you know, she really goes that extra mile to make sure that everybody feels included. So she's using her own success to raise up other people, and I love her, and I'm obsessed with her. And I feel like as well, like, a lot of people, when I say Shonda Rhimes, some people say, you know, who's that? And I love that her work speaks for itself. You know, a lot of people may watch and love her shows, and they may not know who she is, but that doesn't matter, because she's putting it out there. So she's like my number one. I'm obsessed with her. So
I think that's brilliant. I love her. Rowley, how about you?
I mean, mine might be a little bit of a not a cop out, but like mine is actually my sister. It's okay.
That's lovely.
She basically like raised me from a child, and she's obviously older than me. So for me, it was we lived in a council estate. We didn't have a great upbringing, and she like really took the reins and like just gave me a life that I wouldn't have had if she wasn't there. And then like we met when we got a bit older, she like tried her hard. She was working like three different jobs and doing university to make sure that she could help me through stuff. And then she moved to London and got like a job as a teacher, and now she's a deputy head teacher, and she like fought for LGBT like lessons to be taught in her school and everything. Like, it's been so great, and I've just drawn so much inspiration from her that I feel like a better person because of her. And I think
that's an amazing answer. And again, it shows you that we can sometimes blame our past for our future, for you know, things that don't work for us. But that just shows you, no, you can't blame your past for what you want to create.
Yeah.
I think that's so... Yes.
And she fought... Yes. The thing is, she went against everything. Like, everyone was telling her that she wouldn't be able to do it and everything, and she wouldn't be able to move to London, she wouldn't be able to do anything. And it was just like, basically, like, F you, I'm going to do what I want, and she's succeeded.
Takes strength. That really does. It really does. We'll be back in a few minutes' time. We've got an interview coming up with Dan Kaplan. Don't go anywhere.
Foobar Radio, I'm Harriet Rose, joined by my good friend Dan Kaplan.
Sup, Harriet?
How you doing, babe?
Yeah, I'm great.
Long time no see, eh?
Long time.
So it's He For She Arts Week, and we're celebrating right now.
Yeah.
And as a man, we've discussed before in the past in our interviews and stuff, how you can kind of be a man in supportive of women. Yeah. And I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the woman in your sort of that you can imagine being your like most inspirational woman, whether it's like in the industry, whether it's someone that's just made an impact on you, I guess.
I'm choosing Nina Simone, mainly because I was brought up on that, and I actually just recently watched a documentary about her. She was just inspiring because, you know, she was living in a time where, you know, black women were the most downtrodden people, and she was just mad, you know, mad aggressive with kind of pushing herself forward, and she, you know, she struggled with a lot of, you know, prejudice and sexism, and she overcame it.
And she was so passionate, wasn't she?
Yeah.
Like, it was such a fight for her all the way through her career to get people to listen to her, and she's got one of the most iconic voices of the whole of our generation.
It's that mixture of, obviously, you know, historically at that point, you know, classical music was mainly for white middle class. And she was, you know, she was a working class black woman, and she was incredibly talented as a pianist. She wanted to go to conservatoire to study, but they wouldn't allow black women in. So like, and so she started playing jazz, and it's like kind of the weird situations but she made the best out of.
Because she originally didn't actually want to sing, did she? She just wanted to play the piano, and they said you have to, when she was playing in a bar or something, they said you have to sing, and her voice is so different.
Oh my God, it's phenomenal.
When you get a voice like that, you can capture something. It's like the Amy Winehouse's Nina Simone, you know, it's iconic to another level, where you're like, you can't, you can be a good singer, but recreating something like that is...
you can't, there's no point in trying to recreate perfection like that. But she's just struggled her whole life, but always kept moving forward, and she did a huge amount for black rights in the 60s. She was just inspiring. Plus, she pulled out a gun on her A&R from the, at the record label, which is great.
And I love when she's asked about it.
Every artist wants to do that at some point.
And when she's asked about it, she's like, well, yes, of course I did.
But initially, it's like, didn't you? The interviewer was like, did you pull out a knife? And she goes, yes. No, no, it was a gun. I was like, so sick.
No, not a knife, no, a gun. Be serious.
Yeah. Don't do half measures, Nina.
I think that's a wonderful, inspirational woman, Dan Kaplan. Nina Simone, a fabulous lady and an amazing talent. Thank you so much for joining us here on Foo Bar Radio.
No worries, Harriet Rose.
Speak to you later.
Ciao. What the fuck was that?
That was a brilliant way to end the interview. That was Dan Kaplan talking to Harriet a little bit earlier on about his inspirational woman. This is Foo Bar Radio. We're here for the 24-hour live marathon. If you'd like to support us, could you? Thank you. I'll doff my cap to you. This is the He For She campaign. All you need to do is text UNWN15, followed by the amount you want to donate to 770. I've been saying that since 5 p.m. and I still need to check I'm saying it right. If we have gone on a little bit too much and throwing a lot of letters, numbers, braille at you, then check the website londonartsweek.org. And remember, all money donated is going towards changing the reality for women and girls globally. We are going to listen to a little song, In Harm's Way by Amanda Palmer. Don't go anywhere.
What I cannot see cannot be not untrue. Standing on the barrier of me and you, standing where the ocean meets the sand. We cross though we barely understand. The grass is always greener on the land. What we cannot say cannot be not our fault. Searching for a harbor where the sharks don't. See the ones before me disappearing into light. Why would you go? What I cannot see cannot be not unseen. Standing on the barrier of you and ocean meets the land. We cross even though we understand. We cross even though we see the child in
amazing there, In Harm's Way by Amanda Palmer. Now, we are going to listen to a pre-record of Andrea Palauro, film director, Italian film director, who sadly couldn't make it into the live studio, and we had a catch-up a little bit before. Callum and Rowley, do you want to hear our chat with Andrea?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm very excited. Rowley's having a moment. Just
he's moved to tears. He really, really is. Well, look, don't go anywhere. We'll be back very shortly. Here's Andrea Palauro. Now, in the studio, we've got Andrea Palauro. Is that correct? Did I get that right?
That's correct. So thank you. I'm very happy to be here.
It's wonderful to have you here. It really, really is. And I'm learning Italian as we go on here. So this will be good. Now, there's so much about your career and you I want to talk about. The most important thing, first of all, your film, Hannah, it's receiving such amazing reviews. I've got one here that says, a piercing emotional showcase for Charlotte Rampling. I mean, to have an actress of that esteem anyway and to get her performing like that. So let's talk about the film first and foremost. Tell us about your film, Hannah.
Well, it's a film that explores the boundaries between the identity of an individual and the identity of a couple. And what happens when those boundaries get blurred, you know? And ultimately, it's a story that explores the progressive loss of identity of a woman. And the screenplay was written for Charlotte Rampling since the beginning. So, you know, to have had the actual opportunity to create this character with her, to collaborate in bringing it alive, has been one of the most meaningful experiences of my life.
What was it like to work with her?
She is... I think for a director, like you, I can't imagine having a more profound and meaningful experience because, you know, she's the kind of actor that digs and explores and really is committed to reaching the truth of her character. And she does it with so much courage and generosity and integrity. Which are all things that I admire tremendously.
Now, you're obviously a film director, a screenwriter, and you really do seem to capture people, as in their layers, their substance. Is that something you go out of your way to capture on film, or is that just the plays and the films you're interested in? Like, how does it work? Because you really get people.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I think that I'm very interested in exploring the internal world of characters. And I think that cinema has you know, the gives the opportunity to a spectator to penetrate that world and to capture, to understand people's thoughts, you know, characters' thoughts. And that is what has always driven my interest in cinema. And I'm very interested in characters that are often emarginated or not understood by society, or characters that are experiencing like a struggle with their own selves and their own sense of identity. You know, so because of my interests, it comes natural to try to go as deep as possible into the character internal world.
So what were your favorite films growing up? What films inspired you?
Well, there is an endless list. I think that like the films by Michelangelo Antonioni, for example, you know, from L'Avventura, La Notte, L'Eclisse, Blow Up, Red Desert, you know, those are really films that to this day are still inspiring me incredibly, you know, and films that I keep thinking about, you know. But then, you know, Louis Buñuel's films, Lucrezia Martel, you know, the Argentinian director that made films like La Cienega, like The Headless Woman, or The Holy Girl. There is Carlos Regadas, a Mexican director. There are so many, but then there are the Dardenne brothers. There is Michael Haneke, you know. It's really, it also depends on the stage of my life. Usually I gravitate towards certain auteurs and certain filmmakers more than others. But ultimately, I'm very inspired by filmmakers that are able to develop a very specific cinematic language, you know, that, you know, helps us understand the world around them, around us through their eyes, but also provides an opportunity to explore ourselves.
I think that's beautifully said. And you you said something there as well, films stay with you. That's when you know you've got a groundbreaking film, isn't it?
Exactly, exactly. And that is what cinema has meant to me. You know, like I feel like, you know, it's thanks to cinema that I have challenged myself and my understanding of the world, you know. And and that's what I want to, that's the type of relationship I aim to develop with my viewers, with my spectators.
Well, let's talk about Cinema Made in Italy, and it's running until the 11th of March. Tell us about Cinema Made in Italy.
Well, I'm very excited to be part of this little festival here in London. London is a city that I feel a very special relationship to. So to have my film playing here is particularly meaningful. And then also to be included in a group with other filmmakers and other, artists that I admire is always exciting and fun.
And we're speaking to you as part of our fundraising broadcast with UN Women for the He for She campaign. Inspirational women. Who are your inspirational women? And also maybe females in cinema, are there actresses that inspire you?
Of course. Well, it's a very big question.
It's a huge
that has
question.
A lot of answers. But you know, as I grew up in a family where there are a lot of women, you know. And since I was a little kid, you know, I spent a lot of time with my mother's family. My mother has three sisters, and so my grandmother and my three aunts and my mother have been incredible role models for me, you know. And they are very different from each other, but very powerful and strong and beautiful women, you know. And I feel like I have, in growing up, taken, you know, traits and parts of all their personalities. You know, I'm like I'm a mixture of all of them in a way. But that being said, I feel like in my own cinema, you know, female characters play a major role, you know. And in fact, I'm developing a trilogy right now that is focused on female characters. You know, it's a trilogy that started with Hannah and it's continuing now with the second chapter. But that being said, talking about, you know, female artists that have been, or actresses or filmmakers that have been incredibly inspiring for me is like Monica Vitti, for example, Catherine Deneuve, Charlotte Rampling, you know, Liv Ullmann. These are all, you know, women that, you know, they penetrate your soul, you know, with their eyes, you know, their gaze. And they provide such a complex emotional landscape to see yourself reflected in, you know. And I'm very, very grateful to their complexities and their beauty and their eloquence, you know.
Yeah, I think, again, beautifully said. Well, look, thank you so, so much for talking to us. Your film, Hannah, and I know as well that Charlotte Rampling has even won Best Actress Award at the Venice International Film Festival for that role. So this, it's an incredible film. It really, really is. And you mentioned the trilogy there. So we look forward to, when will the next kind of instalment be out? Next year?
Yes, I hope we'll be shooting it this summer. So hopefully in the next year, year and a half. Yes.
Fantastic. And Cinema Made in Italy is running until the 11th of March at the Cine Lumiere. So thank you so, so much for talking to us.
Thank you. Thank you.